My audiobooks.ai presents The Fuel Fabric, Inside Washington's Quiet Plan to Rebuild America's Nuclear Supply Chain. On Monday, August 10th, 2026, the Department of Energy's Office of Nuclear Energy published a notice in the Federal Register that almost no one outside the industry will ever read, a formal plan of action under the Defense Production Act for something called the Market Integrated Fuel Utilization Committee, operating inside the Nuclear Fuel Cycle Consortium Voluntary Agreement. The document's language is bureaucratic. Its purpose is not. It is the operational blueprint for rebuilding the one part of America's nuclear infrastructure that the country allowed to atrophy for three decades, the ability to make its own reactor fuel. At the heart of the plan is a substance most Americans have never heard of, high-assay, low-enriched uranium, known everywhere in the industry as HALEU. It is the fuel that the next generation of advanced reactors runs on, and for years, the only commercial supplier on Earth was a Russian state-owned company. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. During our research into the primary Federal Register notice, the Defense Production Act's voluntary agreement mechanism, and the global uranium enrichment market, we found a story about how the United States outsourced the most strategic link in its energy supply chain, why a Cold War-era emergency law is being used to coordinate private fuel companies, and what it takes to rebuild an industrial capability the country deliberately let go. Section 1. The missing middle of the atom. To understand why the DOE is invoking emergency powers over reactor fuel, you have to understand what the nuclear supply chain actually looks like. Raw uranium ore comes out of the ground mostly as uranium-238, with less than 1% of the fissile uranium-235 isotope that reactors need. Getting from rock to fuel rod is a multi-stage industrial process. Mining, milling, conversion to gas, enrichment to raise the fissile fraction, deconversion back to solid, and finally, fabrication into fuel assemblies. The United States once dominated every stage. Today, large stretches of that chain, especially enrichment and conversion, are dominated by foreign suppliers, with Russia's state nuclear corporation holding a commanding share of global enrichment capacity. The existing American reactor fleet runs on low-enriched uranium, enriched to under 5%. The next generation of advanced reactors, the small modular reactors and micro-reactors the industry is racing to deploy for data centers, military bases, and grid-scale clean power, runs on HALEU, enriched to between 5 and 20%. That higher assay is what lets these new designs be smaller, run longer between refuelings, and operate without the massive cooling systems of conventional plants. And here is the choke point. There is currently almost no commercial HALEU production in the Western world. The only meaningful supplier has been Russia. The United States is trying to build a fleet of advanced reactors whose fuel it cannot currently make at scale. The demand driver that turned this from a long-term concern into an emergency is the artificial intelligence build-out. Data centers for frontier AI models consume electricity at a scale the grid was never designed to deliver, and the technology companies building them have concluded that the only power source that is simultaneously carbon-free, always on, and dense enough is nuclear. That is why the last 2 years have seen a rush of agreements between AI hyperscalers and advanced reactor developers, and why the Pentagon is pursuing micro-reactors for forward bases. Every one of those commitments assumes a fuel supply that does not yet exist domestically. The reactors are being announced on the strength of a fuel chain the country is only now beginning to rebuild, which is precisely the gap the DOE committee is being asked to close before the orders arrive. Section 2. The Defense Production Act as Industrial Policy. The instrument the DOE chose to fix this is revealing. The Defense Production Act, passed in 1950 to mobilize industry for the Korean War, gives the federal government extraordinary powers to direct private production for national security purpose. Most people know it from the pandemic, when it was used to compel ventilator and mask production. But the law contains a quieter tool, Title I voluntary agreements, which allow competing private companies to coordinate on supply chain planning, sharing capacity data, aligning production schedules, dividing up manufacturing tasks, without running afoul of antitrust law, because the coordination happens under a government umbrella for a national security purpose. The Nuclear Fuel Cycle Consortium is exactly that, a voluntary agreement under which fuel fabricators, enrichers, reactor developers, and utilities sit at the same table and map out who will build what, where, and when to close the HALEU gap. The plan of action published this week is the committee's working blueprint: deconversion capacity, fabrication lines, recycling and reprocessing options, and component support, converting a strategic vulnerability into an industrial build-out with named participants and assigned roles. It is industrial policy conducted not through subsidies alone, but through legally sanctioned coordination, the government acting as matchmaker and coordinator rather than sole buyer. The enrichment bottleneck deserves a closer look because it is where the physics meets the geopolitics. Enriching uranium means separating uranium-235 from uranium-238, two isotopes that are chemically identical and differ only by 3 neutrons of mass. The work is done by gas centrifuges, cylinders spinning at tens of thousands of revolutions per minute, where the marginally heavier isotope drifts toward the wall and the lighter one concentrates toward the center. A single centrifuge produces a whisper of separation. A commercial cascade needs thousands of machines running in series for months. Building that capacity is not a matter of pouring concrete. It is a matter of precision manufacturing, specialized materials, and a workforce that takes years to train. Russia built the world's largest such infrastructure over half a century and sells enrichment services globally. The West largely exited the business, assuming the market would always provide. That assumption is what the consortium exists to reverse. This content is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial or investment advice. Section 3. The economics of starting over. Rebuilding a fuel cycle is not like restarting a factory. Enrichment and fabrication are among the most technically demanding, capital-intensive, and heavily regulated industrial processes on Earth. An enrichment facility uses thousands of centrifuges spinning at supersonic speeds to separate isotopes that differ by a few neutrons. A HALEU fabrication line must handle material with tighter criticality controls and more stringent safeguards than conventional fuel facility. The talent pipeline that once staffed these plants has aged out. The supply chain of specialized components has dispersed, and the regulatory licensing timeline for a new fuel facility stretches across years before a single gram of product is made. The capital problem is the quiet killer. A commercial enrichment or deconversion facility costs billions to build and takes the better part of a decade to license, construct, and commission. Investors will fund a reactor startup because the payoff is a product that can be sold the day it is certified. They are far more reluctant to fund fuel infrastructure because the payoff depends entirely on the reactors showing up on schedule. If the advanced reactor build-out slips by 5 years, and reactor projects always slip, the fuel plant sits idle, burning interest expense with no revenue. That timing risk is why the private market has not built HALEU capacity on its own, and it is why the government had to step in as coordinator. Someone has to guarantee that the fuel will be there when the reactors are, and the market alone will not write that guarantee. That is precisely why the voluntary agreement model matters. No single company will sink billions into HALEU capacity on spec, knowing that if advanced reactor deployment slips, the investment strands. But if the government convenes the reactor developers and the fuel makers in one room and has them commit to aligned schedules, you build the reactor, we will build the fuel line to feed it, the chicken and egg deadlock breaks. The plan of action is the coordination layer that lets private capital flow into a supply chain that pure market signals were not building on their own. The plan also extends beyond fresh production into recycling and reprocessing, which is its own quiet revolution. The United States abandoned civilian fuel reprocessing decades ago on non-proliferation grounds, choosing to store spent fuel rather than recover the usable material inside it. The committee's inclusion of recycling and reprocessing in the plan of action signals a possible reopening of that door, a way to stretch domestic uranium supply by recovering what has already been enriched instead of relying entirely on new production. If the United States formally returns to any form of civilian reprocessing, it would be one of the most consequential nuclear policy reversals in half a century, buried inside a technical committee notice. Section 4. The original angle. Energy security is a fuel problem. Setting the notice against the broader energy transition debate exposes a gap between rhetoric and reality. Public discussion of nuclear power fixates on reactor designs, the gleaming small modular reactor renderings, the startup logos, the data center power deals. Almost none of it asks the question the industry quietly obsesses over. Where does the fuel come from? A reactor without HALEU is a billion-dollar paperweight. The United States has signed headline-grabbing agreements to deploy advanced reactors for artificial intelligence and defense installations, and every one of those reactors is hostage to a fuel supply chain that currently runs through foreign enrichment capacity. The concentration of that foreign capacity is the uncomfortable center of the story. After the Cold War, the United States and Russia struck a program that converted dismantled Soviet warheads into American reactor fuel. And for two decades, a meaningful share of the U.S. nuclear fleet ran on blended down Russian uranium. It was elegant disarmament economics, swords into electricity. But it also taught an entire generation of American utilities to buy enrichment rather than build it. And it left Russia's state nuclear corporation as the dominant commercial enricher on the planet. When the geopolitical relationship fractured, the fuel relationship did not. It simply became a vulnerability with a price attached. The consortium's plan of action is, in large part, an attempt to unwind that 30-year dependency without turning off the lights. The DOE's move reframes energy security. It is not primarily about how many reactors get permitted or how much clean energy funding flows. It is about the unglamorous, decades-long work of standing up conversion plants, deconversion lines, and fabrication floors. The industrial middle that no venture-backed reactor startup can build alone and no press release can conjure. The real race in nuclear energy is not to design the best reactor. It is to control the fuel that feeds it. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. Section 5. What to look for next. The first signal is capacity. Watch for the first commercial-scale HALEU deconversion and fabrication commitments from the consortium members. Because announcements of reactor orders mean nothing until a fuel line exists to feed them. The second is the recycling question. The plan of action explicitly contemplates reprocessing and recycling, which would mark a generational reversal of decades-old U.S. policy against civilian reprocessing. Any formal move in that direction is a seismic policy shift hiding in a technical notice. The third is the consortium's composition. The companies that join and the roles they accept will reveal which private players the government has chosen to anchor the domestic fuel chain. And that list is a map of the industry's future.
The fourth is timing against deployment. The advanced reactor order book for data centers and defense is growing faster than fuel capacity. And the gap between reactor delivery dates and fuel availability is the single best leading indicator of whether the build-out is real or aspirational. Each of these determines whether the United States actually rebuilds its fuel cycle or designs a fleet of reactors that run on somebody else's uranium. Section 6. The broader pattern and open question. The broad pattern is the return of industrial policy through emergency law. Facing supply chains it cannot rebuild through markets alone, the government is reaching for Cold War statutes, the Defense Production Act, not to command production, but to convene and coordinate it. The same tool used for ventilators in a pandemic and for semiconductors in a trade war is now being aimed at reactor fuel, which suggests the model has become the default response to any strategic response gap.
There is a second pattern, and it is about the slow parts of the energy transition. The glamorous front end of clean energy, reactors, batteries, solar farms, captures the headlines and the venture capital. But the transition lives or dies in the unglamorous middle. The fuel fabricators, the mineral refiners, the component makers. The August 10th notice is a quiet admission that after 30 years of letting the middle hollow out, the country has to build it back, deliberately, coordinated, and under a law written for wartime.
Which leaves the open question. If the reactors are coming, but the fuel is not, how much of America's nuclear renaissance is a real industrial build-out, and how much is a rendering on a slide deck? And will the fuel fabric get built before the demand for it arrives? The plan of action is published. The committee is convened. The fuel cycle is the whole game, and it is now being played in the open, on the record. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai.
This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.